Chapter 21. Who's Relative Now? The capital of the belligerent world, Berlin, was as yet undivided on any red flag issue, although its foreign policy statements were firmly entrenched in some corner of a foreign field negotiations, with all the noisy assertions and counter-assertions one normally associates with them. Sean found the address Karl Schwarzschild had given him, proudly wearing his watch again after so many centuries, and carrying the bundle of mathematical dispatches from the front. Sometimes he changed grip and carried them from the back, but mostly he carried them from the front. The first sign he encountered a little down the road read, Kaiser Wilhelm's Institute of Theatrical Physics, dies way. But when he was actually at the campus, he saw another sign whose distinctive Germanic typeface had been clumsily painted over in colours which had nothing sensible to say to each other, to read, Big Willy's Institute of Theatrical Physics, with a typewritten note underneath advising, 2 performances a day. New theories on life, the universe, and every other thing, received by royal disappointment only. Just past the elephant excrement souvenir stand, Sean found the caravan office of Mr. Wonstone, the most famous relativizer in the known Teutonic world. There was a note on the door reminding visitors, strictly no butts, cigarette, rifle, of jokes or otherwise. Sean knocked and heard a caricature German accent call out, Na ja! Can't a theorist be having a moment to postulate on his own between of the performances? Mr. Wonstone, my name is Sean Saulpierre. I have a message from a man called Karl Schwarzschild from the front.
And so what do you call him from the back then, eh?
And the caravan door opened to reveal a clown. When I say clown, I obviously mean more of a world-famous theoretical physicist. But the braces holding ill-fitting pants, no socks, flayed cigar moustache, and no-holes-barred hair, not to forget the fake-looking nose, also had me confused for a moment. Examined Sean through large, sad, droopy eyes, which somehow managed to look as though they were always laughing.
But you're Professor Albert Einstein, cried Sean.
The man swung the violin he'd been using to fuzz out his hair onto his back by its carrying strap and said,
Come, come, Jean Saulpierre. I have been waiting for you for such a long time, yeah?
Yeah,
replied Sean, and followed the professor across the campus to the big top canopy, strung between two unrelated buildings.
So you run a circus? Asked Sean, looking at the billing for a troop of acrobats called the Quantum Leapers.
Best way for the crowds to the lectures to be inbringing, yeah? All the students are being blown to bits doing field research, so we at the Institute have opened to the public. It's okay. But the elephants keep stealing my peanut kreuter sandwiches.
And what is this relativity show? Asked Sean, admiring a badly weathered poster for a solar eclipse spectacle.
It started out as a family feature called the Relative Show, but we adapted it into a type of international reality show. It was big flop, yeah. To test my theory of the curving of space in the presence of large masses, I sended one of the contestants, a German astronomer, to Russia to watch the total eclipse of the sun. But you know, it was August 1914. As luck would have it, the Great War had just been launched. Predictable script, but mit ein cast from tens von millions. Now all the best theatres are outbooked for the Bring the Boys Back to the Heimat revivals.
And what happened to your astronomer? Asked Sean.
His name is Erwin Freundlich, you know, Mr. Friendly. I mean, honestly, when he told the Russians that, they arrested him as being spy. They just couldn't believe his name wasn't a cover. So, I missed the chance to verify my theory against the dying of the light. Now we have to wait for the next eclipse. I have an English agent, Arthur Eddington, who promises to redirect some starlight in my direction after the war. That'll make me world famous, he say. But I don't want a way-carried being. They say I can move the universe, expand it with my theory. But I am all time saying, the universe is big enough already, yeah? I can't paint a clear image of something that is moving all the time, can I? In the meantime, I do matinees of our classical repertoire, and I shovel out the elephant's cage twice a day. 3 times on paydays. Those peanuts.
But why a circus? Asked Sean, enthralled as he watched the vastly colourful and anarchic collection of acts as they prepared for the next show.
It was all Big Willie's idea.
Big Willie?
Kaiser Wilhelm. Here's the money. He wanted something for the children's to be him remembering, yeah? Good idea. Kids, they never remember atomic structure lessons. But I remember well a clown who is this foot and elephant poop stepping, yeah?
So how did you get into the physics show business?
I couldn't get a normal job. No one would take me on as a researcher. They kept telling me there was no vacancy for someone who didn't know it all already.
But I thought research was all about exploring the unknown.
Yeah, but you have to tell them in advance exactly what you're going to discover in order for to be getting the fundings, yeah? My mother always say, you don't need a big villy if you have a good funding. So I took my big hit, the Easy to Measy sing-along equation, and turned it into a long-running musical.
Easy to Measy?
On graffiti text messages. Teenagers, they write. E equals MC squared, for short. The full formula goes on for several pages. But I ran out of the ink and sent in what I had to the publisher, which is just as well because it was eventually an immediate hit. It is being the number 1 on the top 10 equations list since every year.
But why a circus? Insisted Sean.
As a child, I fancied I could see light as funny little guys shooting out from a circus cannon, waving at me as they came. It was not until I was 25 that I realized I had been right all along. Can you see them too?
You mean you think light is not a continuous wave, but little bundles of waves?
What I am saying is that I like circuses. And what better circus than the world of theatrical physics? Ah, I always knew I would make a great clown.
Yes, with hair like that.
What's wrong with mine hair?
Nothing, it's, distinctive.
Without the hair, enormous moustache and big nose, I would revert to mild-mannered Swiss patents clerk. In this get-up, I am superstar of the equations hit parade. And one day I will get around to patenting mine invention. Mr. Onestone's miracle hair exploder. All mine hairs are electrostatically charged and will stay up like this all the day. No more combing, no more the need of the oil or the creams. I'm saving 1/2 hour every morning by the feigning of eccentricity, yeah, yeah.
Is that why you wear no socks?
You can wear socks, but you can't, strictly speaking, wear no socks.
Something I've always wanted to know, Professor, is what is the difference between special relativity and general relativity?
In 1905, when I wrote Special Relativity, I was going with a world record. 4 world-shattering papers in the 1 year. I was therefore in a hurry. I left gravity out of the equations.
How could you forget gravity?
I know, I know.
Sean raised his on-loan eyebrows. As I understand it, it was the search for an explanation of gravity which gave birth to the modern science of physics. Both Galileo and Newton came down with gravity fever, but you don't fall for that?
Oh, but I do. How do you think my nose is getting to be this shape?
And Laplace's probability, that everything happens by chance, measured against the probability of its not bothering? Isn't that what drives the universe?
I don't approve of the gambling. That's how I lost my socks and belt. And I don't see why Mr. Biggie should be playing at the dice, particularly at his age.
Einstein was gradually working his way around the tent exterior, examining the suspension ropes which looped over its domed roof. He tested their tension by strumming them with his violin bow.
And this important. During the reality show, the tent is the universe. See how these lines look parallel down here at the ground. But in reality, they eventually converge and meet at the center of the roof, just where the pigeons do their thingies. It is the presence of the heavy tent canvas which bends the space inside into a curve.
Yes, said Sean. These ropes look like the lines of longitude on the Earth's surface. If I remember right, my nonno called them geodesics.
G-I-C-6? He may be right there. If these ropes are not being tied, when the wind is strong blowing, all the trapeze artists hanging from the roof inside are thrown about like in a ship on the high sea. Really messy down below, believe me. So I always must to tighten these ropes. They are at right angle to the ground, but only look to be parallel. Euclid. Remember Freddie Euclid?
Freddie Euclid?
Well, the textbooks, they always just say Euclid. But I say he must be having a first name too, yeah? What were his family called, eh? Papi Euclid, Mama Euclid, and Little Euclid's 1, 2, 3? He needed to invent a new mathematics just to work out whose turn it was to use the bathroom. So I call him Freddy till someone is bringing me a birth certificate to the country. Anyway, Freddy was darn certain these perpendicular lines would always be parallel. His idea looked good on the flat parchment. And for 2,000s of years, everyone is in believing. But he was not a showman like me. In my new circus, time-space, all parallel lines intersect somewhere. Maybe over the rainbow, but definitely somewhere. He indicated a complex array of pegs and stays holding the ends of the ropes, each numbered in a seemingly random pattern. We need these tensors, or our circus space-time is collapse. There's a little trick we physicists play. Whenever we end up with a difference between reality and our mathematics, we don't are getting off the depressed, no. We are pulling out the fudge.
Einstein offered Sean some of the confectionery in question from a seriously scrunched paper bag, but Sean shook his head scoldingly.
You mean you cheat?
We are all it to do. If nobody is calling it cheating, the public is never it to notice. I just multiplied what I got with a number that made it equal what everybody says I should have got. To keep the cosmos constant, I need a cosmological constant. I put it on the tensors like this.
He applied a fudge wad to one of the rope stays.
Once the universe stays put, neat, yeah?
It tastes unconvincing, muttered Sean, trying the smallest piece of the fudge.
But strong enough to make my rewrite of the laws of physics stick.
But that would mean rewriting Newton's laws of motion. Why would you want to do that? Asked Sean through glued teeth.
Because I rubbish at boxing. Look at my nose.
Sean looked instead at the unnecessarily complex and unstable array of tensors holding the tent in place. And does your theory really prove Newton was wrong? He asked, feeling he needed to defend his old friend.
It is not so much a question of whether Newton was wrong or right, but that his description of the universe is a little short on the details.
You mean his theory of gravity only applies to a limited case?
Exact so. I am publishing a theory called General Relativity und its ideas on war in practice.
Sean remembered Karl Schwarzschild's notes he was carrying. Could I suggest calling it General Relativity and the Field Theory?
Good. Catchy. How does it end?
Like all generals' theories, in a big bang.
Nine, no big bang. I want a grand, epic version of the cosmos. It might start with a big bang promotional trailer, but I prefer a slow, agonizing ending to the universe, due to consumption, much more than melodramatic.
That plot has been flogged a bit in opera, hasn't it?
You think we need something new? You think we need something new?
How about Onwards Forever?
Yeah, a bit socialistic, not really in vogue.
A knot was coming undone on one of the tensor's stays. Einstein took out another large wad of fudge he had been chewing and used it to hold it down.
But without the sticky fudge to hold it together, the universe would be slipping apart.
Sean took an old monocycle inner tube he found and used that to connect another loose tensor to its stay. The rope length expanded and contracted gently in the breeze, and the big top seemed relieved about it. You think the universe can't be expanding? Sean asked the clown professor.
You don't think an infinite universe is big enough already? You want more than infinite? You greedy.
And if you are wrong and the universe is expanding? Sean tweaked the rubber stay in demonstration. Einstein was impressed by the rubber tube device.
Yeah, in perfectly curved space-time, there should be no corners to cut.
He looked down at the gooey mess he had made on his own tensor, already coming apart. Einstein twanged the rubbery rope Sean had made like a big kid.
So, maybe I have been wrong all along. This is fun, yeah? The trick is to realize that space-time is not what we think it is. It is not fixed and immovable, but flopping about like a big floppy thing.
A rubber mattress?
If that is your idea of a good time, yeah.
The inclusion of gravity in your relativity theory will bend space-time in such a way that every circus act fits, encouraged Sean, noting the tent lift as an elephant entered through a tight flapway.
"I prefer the straight lines. They help me walk home. But after a couple of schnapps, who has more the straight lines, eh?"
"Yes, but like this, you don't need any more fudge." Sean took the bag off him, and Einstein only occasionally looked longingly at it. They had circumvented the tent and returned to the main entrance. A group of children ran out from the long queue waiting to buy tickets from the box office, which was actually only a tent flap manned by a chimpanzee. They crowded around the famous scientist and demanded he paint E equals MC squares on their shirt fronts. Entertaining the waiting audience was a group of hefty pom-pom fräulein, dancing and chanting.
"E equals M, E equals M, E equals MC squared. He's the man who can. He showed them he's not scared. E equals M, E equals M, E equals MC squared. One stone, all's now known. He's the one who dared."
"Come into the big top," Sean's guide invited. It was a standard circus ring decked out tackily to look like a university lecture hall. "This is the model of the cosmos." Einstein shone a spot gas lamp upwards.
"The lights on the ceiling are the stars, yeah? According to my relative theory, light quanta are my unwanted extended family, which I shoot out of the cannons here to see how they bend around the stars and behave in freefall.
Can you plot them accurately?"
"Screams make clear markers. Impact gives us a good splatter pattern. When the fingernail scratches on the ceiling, we can plot the entire flight path."
"What makes it a model of gravity?" asked Sean, impressed by the scale and daring of modern experimental physics.
"When they hit one of the ground energy levels,"
Einstein indicated the different levels of the rake seating around the ring,
"it really hurt. That's serious. The more energy, the more serious. The more serious, the more gravity, yeah? Then we have the spontaneous emissions. That not so nice."
"You must be running out of relatives."
Yeah, a big problem. But we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. That's how I got my genial idea for the next season."
"I'm going to regret asking what that is, aren't I?"
"I think so. The best circus acts involve defying gravity, yeah? Under these stringent testing conditions, one figure out of place in the balancing act on the whole theoretical edifice ends up in a pile of broken bones on the floor, yeah? So, I am thinking, what if the whole big top were being pulled through the air, and it is the audience that does the falling?"
Sean bulged his eyes. "Are you sure that will work?"
"Of course not. We don't want to be certain. Certainty is the mother of convention."
"Ah, I see. A principle of uncertainty, perhaps."
"We mustn't be sure about that. At the turn of the century, physicists knew just about everything about what made the universe tick. Just a couple of puzzles remained, they say. Sort them out and we're all out of business. But those little anomalies that refuse to comply to the we knows it all already models, nagged and nagged, and finally attempts to resolve them destroyed the whole fabric of physics, like pulling a single thread out of a jacket, like so. Dan, I shouldn't use that example so much, nya?"
Sean remembered the mathematical dispatches from Karl Schwarzschild he was still carrying. "I think you can now find an answer to the true nature of time and space, and without any cheating." He jiggled the bag of fudge reprovingly before tossing it to a passing mongoose. The show had started to a packed, expectant audience. Waiting in the wings for his entrance cue, Einstein pointed at the cannons.
"In this cosmic reality show, space and time tell stuff how to move."
He then waved at the vast, heavy dome of the tent above them.
"But it is their stuff which is telling space-time how to curve."
He spread his arms and imitated an aeroplane swooping around.
"And if the universe is expanding?" asked John.
"We should test that theory, yeah? To expand the tent, we need something really explosive and gaseous. I know. I will increase the peanut percentage in the elephant feed. A little dangerous to be around, but should do the trick. I will call it the airbag."
"Yes," nodded Sean. "A good model should always take inflation into account. Tell me, what is that elevator equipment for?" he asked, indicating two large boxes being winched up to a high platform.
"We play a kind of reality game. There are two closed elevators. That man you see being dragged screaming into one of them is the volunteer, yeah? Now he is inside and cannot see out. The only equipment he have is a small rubber ball. One of the elevators is accelerated upwards by a rocket, while the other is allowed to plummet freely. The audience can see which is which, but the contestant inside cannot see out. The game is for the contestant to work out, by only bouncing the ball, whether he is accelerating up, still, or in free fall. If he gets the answer right in relative good time, he can release a parachute. If he gets it wrong, like now, he is, let's say, relatively badly off. From the scatter pattern on the ground, we derive the curve of classical inertia of thought.
But that's not fair, said Sean, trying not to laugh at the antics of the comic ambulance team which had arrived to clean up in time for the next act.
Fairest for war. This is their show business.
So does this crash course help the public understand your complex theory?
In all probability, no. But it is greatly funny.
You think there's still a place for comedy in mathematics?
Oh, yeah. But it was not always so easy. When I was just 4 years in the aging, some van is me giving a book about Euclid's geometry. For a joke, they said. I also had heard that Newton is said to have laughed only one time in his life, and that was when someone asked him if Euclid was necessary. I read the book 10 times and didn't even chuckle. I knew then that I was going to have difficulties with the mathematics. So I went in for relative humor instead. You know, stand-up routines, telling gags about my family missing trains and trams. I got poor reviews initially, but since then I've built up quite a following.
And that apparatus over there? Asked Sean, indicating a large collapsible telescopic pole to one side of the circus ring. It was made up tackily to look like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, complete with a launch platform on top.
I first person to be winning the Cannonball Olympics since Galileo rewrote the rules.
Einstein winked one of his enormous fun-loving eyes, then danced into the ring to do his popular equations medley routine, which has since become a standard in universities around the world, to thunderous appreciation. After he came off and was scraping the elephant poop from his enormous shoes, Sean asked him, "So, what did you win in the cannonball competition?" Einstein jiggled the coins in his pocket.
"Mit today's theory, only mein lunch. But I have hopes of the Nobel Prize after the war."
"Wow!
Do you are knowing why it is called the Nobel Prize?" "It is because it is worth such much a lot of money. The winner falls victim to the other relative effect, resulting in huge numbers of previously unknown relatives spontaneously appearing on the doorstep. So we winners must to take away the doorbell, hence the nickname Nobel Prize."
Sean let a reluctant tear escape. "I wish I had some relatives left. I don't even know where my mother is. I miss her so." Einstein placed a reassuring hand on Sean's shoulder.
"You know something, Johnny? It seemed to me that your mother has not vanished entirely."
"Really? Do you know where she is?"
"I think she has maybe just stepped outside the Lorentz limits."
"The Lorentz limits?"
"You play the ball for foot, yeah? The Lorentz limits are like the sidelines in football games. They describe the cone of permitted play in the time and the space of the past and the future. Even if you run like me to the pub after work, you're not ever getting outside ways of the Lorentz limits."
"Are you saying my mother is offside in some sort of cosmic football match?"
"Someone is her to give the red card, yeah? My guess is your mother took maybe a stroll outside these limits. She shouldn't be able to do that. But mamas, do they ever listen to their sons, eh? If she had studied physics, she would have known it was impossible. But it seems she hasn't, and therefore felt free to give it a whirl. All you have to do is look in the right place, outside the light cone that defines what is possible and what is an imprecise possibility."
By now the show had come to its end, and the happy, if slightly mass-depleted, crowd were returning to the more classical reality outside. His personalized equation autograph duties finally over, Einstein turned to Sean.
"Now, Johnny Silpier, what have you brought to me from Schwarzibor at the front?"
Sean handed his bundle of papers to the professor. "First of all, here are his field equations applying general relativity to a large mass compressed to the critical Schwarzschild radius, the point at which gravity is so gooey light can no longer escape. The Speke Celesti, which describes a blob from dark, has been found. Incredible!" Einstein opened the treatise
and devoured the lines of maths like you and I might a plate of squiggly spaghetti.
The speaky celesti which describes a blob from dark has been found? Incredible! Fantastisch! Now I can finish my predictions of the curvature of space and get some rights this time.
And he also gave me this. He said, thank you, you were right, it was very useful. Sean pulled up his sleeve and with a Bilbonian look of regret, took off his digital watch and handed it to the great professor. Einstein took the watch and held it for a few moments with great affection, and then handed it back to Sean.
Why don't you keep it, yeah? If I'm not wrong, it is, after all, yours.
But, Professor, how did you know?
Archimedes. He be telling me.
He what? How?
From this.
Einstein started pulling things out of one of his deep patchwork clown pockets. After the yo-yos, sherbet wrappers, party balloons, a live mouse, and what appeared to be parts of a relativity demonstration model train set, he found what he was looking for, an old notebook. Sean took it and began to read.
But, Professor, these are by John the Measurer.
This is what is written in the long-lost swan song palimpsest of Archimedes, last seen by Isaac Barrow in Constantinople in 1659.
He was not the last European to it be seen. The original is still in the library in Constantinople, but it has been found and read by a great Dane, Johan Heiberg, and he made this copy.
Wow! So you know all about Archimedes and what happened to his notebook after the fall of Syracuse?
Yeah, but it is not complete. The palimpsest is in what for a terrible condition. It has been scraped over on some lousy pop songs of the time written over the top by a bored monk. But Heiberg managed to read enough to tell us that the famous watchbearer is Zwiss, and will one day return to the mortal world to reclaim the holy relic, the Sangre Al, which their measurer spirited out of Egypt to India and China to keep it from the Romans.
So you have been expecting me, said Sean happily, and Karl Schwarzschild knew I was coming all along.
Yeah.
But how did you get this notebook?
Heiberg is giving to me his notes, because I was been living so long in Schokoland I feel now Swiss. As Swiss as a roll in the hay, playing Heidi und Sieg.
He swung his violin around and plucked a quick yodel doodle dandy,
singing Heidi, Heidi ho, she's my girl, you know.
But how did you get the watch? Asked Sean.
The last time I saw it, it was on the altar in the haunted house in 1800. I've been assuming that since Napoleon evidently failed to complete the Vitruvian crystal that day, he took the watch away with him.
I don't know what he did, but I found the watch there in 1905.
But how did you find the haunted house?
When I was young, my family lived in Milan and Switzerland. It was not hard to find the house from the trail of freaked-out door-to-slam salesmen. And I also deduced from Laplace's writings that he knew the Vitruvian crystal would not complete that day you disappeared.
He knew? But why didn't it complete? Not that I'm sorry, of course.
Laplace was genius. And he knew enough to know he could not calculate the geometry necessary to complete the Vitruvian crystal. To do that, you need not only four-dimensional geometry, but five-dimensional.
I see. Speaky Celesti was still not complete.
Yeah, in terms of the third, fourth, and fifth dimensions, Newton's classical mechanics are the truth, the whole in truth, and anything but the truth.
Tell me, Professor, said Sean, how is it possible for me to travel through time? How can I find my family and release my friends, the Time Riders? Do you have any idea what is going on inside the VC? What is causing the disruption to the timeline?
Do you have any harder questions, maybe?
Sorry, it's just, I don't know. I go from place to place, time to time, genius to genius. All the time I find out that Speaky Celesti is the key, that somehow time is not what we think it is, and yet I come no closer to understanding anything that has happened to me.
I tell you this. For me, light is the fastest thing. Universe champion. Gold medal over all distance. We need to know more about the nature of light to understand time. And es ist this very same light that we wish to cast on the mysteries of the universe, yeah?
Sean shuffled through these propositions. Karl said that inside a Schwarzschild radius, time behaves like space, and space like time. How does that work?
It is all explained by the Speaky Celesti equations. Ask any accountant. If the bottom line goes to zero, you have infinite problems at the end, yeah?
So what goes to zero?
Time. If a ding, you know, like a star, get really heavy, obese even, then time must slow down so it still can do what it is stars like to do. Otherwise, it no longer can fit into reality. And the heavier it gets, the more the time it drags. You never notice? The fatter the singers, the longer the operas. And now I ask you, what would happen if you have infinite mass?
Time would stop entirely. The event horizon on a black hole, said Sean.
And it is the same for energy and space, and vice versa.
Okay, that might explain slowing or acceleration of time. But what allows me to time travel?
Well, actually, you don't travel. You are nowhere, so you are everywhere. It all depends where your mind is focused.
So I guess what you are saying is that somehow the Vitruvian crystal has opened for us a fifth dimension from which we can see the fourth dimension, which is time.
Except that is no longer time as we 4DBs think of it.
I see. Once you can observe something, its nature changes. That is what my nonno meant when he said time does not exist. Einstein nodded, pleased with his exceptional student.
He could have added unless you wanted to.
Neat, concluded Sean. Okay, now what?
I had rather been hoping you would have supplied the answer to that question.
In the event, the answer came in the form of a group of soldiers in classic bad guy German uniforms, who now stormed into the tent.
You will be met us coming,
one of them ordered in a slightly metallic voice.
Where to? The palace. The Kaiser demands to see you.
Einstein prepared to leave.
I wonder what big Willy wants for me now. Maybe another moustache competition.
Einstein prepared to leave.
Nein.
The soldier looked past Einstein at Sean. The both of you.